Okay, we're thinking about elders. When you think about elders, the Bible refers to them as shepherds. There are five other descriptions as well. And when you think about elders, they are watching over, the Bible says, a flock. So you've got Christians portrayed as sheep. We did promise to go through and look at some things related to elders, and this is sort of the first stage or step in that process. And it made sense to me to go through the scriptures and see if we can pick up some things relative to the words flock and shepherd and draw some points of application as kind of a foundation. We got down with the outline last week, and like I say, this is in many respects the same outline, but I tried to refine it a little bit, so it's going to be a little easier to pick out some of the practical points, I hope. We left off, I believe, with point H. That's going to be Exodus 22, verse 1. And we'll get that helper lined up in just a minute, along with the helper for I. Two passages there, Deuteronomy 17:1 and Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 1. So in just a minute, who'd like to go back to the book of Exodus for us? Read chapter 22 in the first verse, Jeff. Exodus 22:1. After that, we'll turn our attention to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 17:1. Steve will take that, and we'll follow that with Deuteronomy 22, verse 1. Steve, we get that one too, since you'll be in the same book, just a few chapters ahead of that. All right, let's go to Exodus 22, verse 1.
If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep.
Okay, we know that people can steal about anything. When I was in high school, I had somebody steal my favorite basketball. It took me a long time to get it back, and by the time I got it back, they had done some damage to my basketball. So people, adults, kids will steal just about anything. Sheep can be stolen in the secular realm. Can sheep be stolen in the spiritual realm? Sure. How might that happen? What would be some of the ways in which that could occur? All right, you have false teachers. Sometimes they will come in. We'll look at that a little bit later in Acts chapter 20, but they try to steal from the flock. That's happened throughout time. Where else do we see it?
Temptation,
devil. All right, the devil is certainly interested in stealing from the flock, isn't he? Devil's always got room for one more. So when you think about Satan, he wants to draw people away into his kingdom. So false teachers from human beings, the devil. What else? Stolen sheep.
The world.
All right. The world, which is kind of hand in hand with Satan, but there can be some differences there. Yeah, you've got people. For example, you have somebody that becomes a Christian, and they decide that they're going to start severing some of their old connections. Do you think some of those old friends would like Joe or Sue back? You know, we used to have so much fun together. We enjoyed the time together. Come back. Begin to do the things that we did. So again, Satan ultimately would be responsible for that. But you've got the old friends, too. They're working in conjunction with the devil.
Well, really, it's if it isn't God that has the sheep, it's Satan's trying to get them.
Yeah. Right. You've only got the two spiritual forces. And sometimes you've got, you know, if you kind of subdivide that, you know, you've got sort of this category. But right, it's going to fall under one of those two general headings. Anything else? Stolen sheep. Sherman, then we'll come back to you, Ray.
Well, kind of related to idols. Do you think God or idols? Idols can be your TV that you're watching. Anything before God.
Okay. You know, you've got to be in this flock or that flock. So there are a lot of things that would cause people to head or stray from the right flock.
You can have invited to the church, false teachers.
Sure. And you've got that, as I said, in Acts chapter 20 that we'll look a little later at. But that does happen. Paul said to the elders, from among your own selves shall men arise. And so it does happen in the church. That's been a huge problem in a lot of places. I had one other thought there as far as stolen sheep. Maybe that'll come back to me. What can elders do when it comes to stolen sheep? All right. You know, if there's a missing sheep and Jesus gave that illustration, you leave the 99 and you go out, so you want to act on that as quickly as possible. What else? Looks like a sheep's being stolen. Don't wait. All right. Do you think that elders might ask other Christians to become involved in the process?
Right.
Remember Galatians 6:2? Even if one of you is overtaken in a sin, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one. Would the elders be the only spiritual people in a congregation? Hopefully not. You might have several people. So you have elders using various techniques to make sure that the stolen sheep are returned. Hopefully the gate is shut and they never leave in the first place. But that's an important principle from Exodus 22:1. All right, Steve, let's move to you. Deuteronomy 17:1, and then after we talk about that, 22:1.
You shall not sacrifice to the Lord your God a bull or sheep which has any blemish or defect. for that is an abomination to the Lord your God.
Okay, you know, the majority of the class in here will never serve as an elder. But still, I think there's a valuable point here to be extracted from the passage. When you look at physical sheep, and we see this at 4-H, whether you're dealing with the fruits and the vegetables or the animals out there, do you find sometimes, and even us, when we go to the grocery store, do we find some blemished fruit?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you've got some oranges that don't look very good. You've got some apples that we think, hey, let's put that back, and if somebody else wants it, fine, maybe they're going to dump it. Do we find some blemishes when it comes to people? Everybody's got a blemish of some kind, right? For all have sinned and fall short of God's glory, Romans 3, verse 23. What about elders as they deal with blemished people? You think an elder might be more prone to find some blemish with folks than maybe some others in a local congregation? What do elders do?
I think you're right. Elders can see things in other people. Sometimes they don't even see what's in themselves. But elders are watching for that.
Yes.
Elders also have to remember that they have blemishes too.
That's right. That's exactly right. Hopefully elders, they've got a little bit more experience than some other people, so because of that, they may be a little more sensitive to things. But also, what do elders do? They watch over the flock. Now, if you're doing that as a literal shepherd, are you going to know the sheep? Well, I mean, you should. We talked last time about the fact that some elders just kind of want to stand out there and be figureheads, business people, let's just make money, decisions, and that's all we're going to do. That's not a biblical elder. But, you know, if you're trying to work with people, somebody comes along and says, well, okay, talking to somebody, you know, husband-wife situation, the husband's got a problem with pornography, you know, the wife is involved in this, that, and the other thing. And when you make some of those visits sometimes, you get an earful. You know, you start realizing, hey, you know, in the secular realm, sheep are dirty. In the physical realm, you know, this the wife has a drug problem. You know, or the wife or the husband's doing this, that, or the other thing. And you can really get into some interesting and difficult situations for elders. So if you have had in the past the idea that elders are people who just kind of really don't do very much, well, you may want to rethink that. Because the Bible uses that image of shepherds and sheep to convey that this is some very, very difficult work. And I think that's why the Hebrew writer said, and Paul too, as he dealt with the Thessalonians, you know them that are over you. You appreciate them because this work is not nearly as easy. It's kind of like the boss at work. I think in the younger years, most of us have been out in the work world long enough, but you look at the boss and you think, what kind of life does he have? Man, he's got it made. Just sits over there in the corner and he doesn't do anything. You know, he just decides who gets promoted and who doesn't. Well, if you ever get any kind of management job, if you're ever in kind of any position where you have some degree of authority over folks, you know, Sherman, you know, people can look at his job and say, well, hey, you're the manager. You know, everything is just great for you. Well, talk to him after class and see if he has that view that it may be as easy as what it may look like. And there have been other people in here that have been in this same kind of boat.
When you look at the elders, too, is because people know their elders, where do they go to? They talk to him so he hears everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's any backbiting or any kind of gossip going around, sooner or later, the elder's going to hear it. And that's stressful.
Mm-hmm. I stopped in a Kroger's the other night and I wanted an item. I was really hungry for some Nutty Bars, in case you're curious what it was. I just get that craving every once in a while. So I checked the right section. I thought what was the right section and no Nutty Bars were there. I thought, well, that's a bummer. Should have gone to Walmart. But anyway, I was walking over to get something that was a lot more nutritious, and there was a fella. He said, did you find everything? And I said, well, no. And he said, what do you want? And I said, well, believe it or not, I want some Nutty Bars. He said, oh, yeah, we've got those. Every once in a while, you just get hungry for those, don't you? And I said, well, at least I do. And he said, I know right where they are. So he walked halfway across the store and showed me where they were, and we visited for a little bit, and that was fine. So before I went up front, I thought, you know, that guy was just so helpful. I'm going to put in a good word for him for manager. Sometimes Teresa says, well, who do you think you are? Well, I think I'm a satisfied customer. That's who I am. So went up to the front and paid the bill and asked the cashier helper in the automated checkout. I said, can you call over a manager? Anything I can help you with? I said, I don't think so. So she called over a manager, and the manager came over. I don't know that I looked scary, but she was kind of wringing her hands. Her body language said, I don't think this is going to be a good thing. Well, you know, usually when you have a manager come over, and this relates to your point, usually when you have a manager come over, you're going to get chewed out. And I said, you know, you've got a really fine employee back there. His name is John. I asked him if he was the only John in the store, and he said, well, probably. I said, he's back there unpacking the dairy stuff. And I want you to know that he asked if I'd found everything I hadn't. He walked halfway across the store and was really kind and thoughtful. So if you got an Employee of the Month Club or on his next review, you might want to go ahead and say, hey, we really appreciate you. And she said, we've got an Employee of the Month program here. And I said, well, you might want to consider him for nomination. Now, let's take that and put it into terms of elders. You know, here you have this manager. What does she expect to receive based on her job? All right, there's probably going to be some kind of criticism. She's going to think, okay, this guy wants to see me, and it's not going to be new. But, you know, her body language, once you say you've got a really good employee, it relaxed. And, hey, thank you very much for calling me out. I mean, it was like we went from day to night with her. Same thing with elders. Somebody says to the elders, I want to talk to you. Well, generally speaking, I suspect that most elders are going to immediately think, this is probably not a good situation. Elders, and this is a general statement, but I would say it's true in 90%+ of the cases when somebody says, I want to talk to you, it's not, I want to thank you. It's, I've got a complaint, I've got a gripe. So the Bible recognizes that when it talks about, you know, to esteem these men, to know them and so forth, to appreciate them. So when a congregation has elders, they're trying to do a good job. This is part of the responsibility the flock has, to look to the elders and say, hey, thank you for what you've done. We know that you get plenty of grief. We know that appreciation isn't always expressed, and that should be part of how God's people respond. Follow-up thought or not? Okay. Steve, let's pick up that other reference from Deuteronomy. That's going to be Deuteronomy 22, verse 1.
You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and hide yourself from them. You shall certainly bring them back to your brother.
Okay, as we think about sheep, looking at this passage from Deuteronomy, what do we find sometimes in the literal realm of sheep? What do? They wander off. They decide that they're going to stray somewhere else. Well, that's dangerous for sheep for a lot of reasons. When we think about in the spiritual realm, the sheep as far as God's people, do they also stray? Sure. And you know, when you think about straying, it's not that they just immediately drop off the cliff. Straying implies what kind of process? All right, it's a gradual. It's something that may just happen a little at a time. So, once again, when we begin to think about some of the New Testament things that are said about elders, what would be one of the key words? You, if you're an elder, you need to watch. Why? Well, for a lot of reasons, but those sheep, they can start straying. And you are, as an elder, or the eldership as a whole, you are responsible for those people. So you want to make sure that they stay within the confines of where the Bible describes. They you know, may get closer together, that's fine, but once they start straying outside the pen, if you will, then that becomes an issue. So that's also a responsibility for elders. Now, let's take that and add a little to it. If you're a shepherd, you're out there with a flock of maybe 500 sheep. You think you might appreciate somebody that's not trying to really interfere, but somebody sees a problem with the sheep. Hey, there's a sheep over there on the northeast side of the pen. I mean, we've got a lot of sheep here, and it looks like it's found a hole in the fence. You might want to go over and check that out. Not trying to interfere. I mean, you know, I'm not the shepherd. You think that might be helpful to us if we were a literal shepherd? I think we'd appreciate that information. You think we can apply that to the church as well? Where there's a sense in each one of us is sort of our brother's keeper. Somebody sees something that's coming up. Elder, you know, you may already be aware of this. Hopefully you are, but just in case, this is something that you might want to take note of. So you've got the elders and the congregation, in some respects, working together to make the congregation the best place it can be. So it's not that we're trying to serve as tattletales or anything else, but those kinds of things. Any other items that you want to ask?
Well, I think that would be helpful. The elders can't see everything.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes elders will ask input. As far as, you know, we're looking at this. If you were going to change service times, you have three elders in a congregation. You've got a congregation of 100 people. Again, you would have the authority, I'd argue, to change service times. But if you've got three fellows that would like to meet at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that works out well for them, if they're good shepherds, what are they going to think about and maybe inquire about before they decide to move services from 6 to 3? Yeah, what about everybody? I mean, you know, that lets me get my nap in, or, you know, whatever they're thinking, mow my grass or whatever they're thinking, but we want to make sure that we're doing what's right for the flock. So we might get some input from the congregation and say, do we want to keep services here, or do we want to go ahead and possibly move services? And eldership is going to make that decision. But again, taking input, and certainly for the spiritual matters like you were describing, to take that input as well.
Because find that, at least I found that, the eldership is only as good as those that want to help them out too. If the congregation is always fighting against the eldership doesn't work.
Yeah.
You've got to have a congregation that stands behind them, and even if they have friends that are in error, you have to keep everybody willing to stick for the truth, and who we call kids' sides, because then you start having, that's where the division starts.
Yeah, well, you've got the leaders in the congregation are the elders. If the sheep are not going to follow in the secular realm, that's going to be a problem. I mean, you're always trying to, you know, go in and prod with the staff, the sheep, and get them back into line. But that's how it's designed to work in the world, in the church, the same kind of thing. But you do have sometimes some shepherds that get crosswords with the sheep with the shepherd, and then you have the kinds of problems often leading to division, which you discussed.
And there's some elders that are better at talking to people than others.
That's right.
Because of the way, who they are, their personalities. Everybody says, well, don't get it, but personality is huge.
Yeah.
People take really offense if they feel like they've been talked to, down to, or
sure.
Maybe had an attitude like he already had his decision made before he even talked to you.
Again, you know, you've got there when you deal with shepherds and sheep in the literal realm. There needs to be a good relationship there. I mean, if the guy's always swatting the sheep, you know, if the sheep is always being, you know, doing what it can to the shepherd to be, factious and rambunctious, those relationships are not going to be good. So you do have, and again, some of these things parallel things in the world. You have sometimes people that if there is something that needs to be discussed, choosing this person from the company to discuss things may be the best choice, whereas this individual may not be the best choice to address a topic with someone. So you do have those things. Some are going to be closer to others. And then, too, with individual Christians. Most of us have been Christians long enough and seen at least one eldership where you may have person X here that says, of the three elders, I want to talk to him. Another one says, from here, I feel most comfortable talking to him. Somebody on the far side says, I feel most comfortable talking to Elder X. Anything wrong with that? No. Now, ideally, any of the elders should be somebody that we feel like we can approach and talk to. So if that's something that we feel like we can't do, then hopefully that relationship can be strengthened and bettered. But that may be one of the reasons that God set up his church with multiple elders. Anything else? Sherman?
On your point about people gradually falling away, that's where visitation is so important, because the longer the church waits, their heart becomes hardened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just not as, they're not going to see the need unless you reach them fast.
Mm-hmm. All right. Think about smoking. Somebody smokes one cigarette. Are they likely hooked?
No.
Probably not. But you get to your 100th, your 1,000th, your 500,000 cigarette. By that time, what have you got? Well, you've got a habit, don't you? Same kind of thing when it comes to other items, in this case, the spiritual realm. Stray once, you go, okay, that's not a habit. Stray twice, second time's a little easier. Third time, hey, you know, this gives me some new freedom, if you will, quote unquote. And then after a little while, you know, the person has actually formed that habit. And if that's not addressed and the sheep is not restored, then you've got somebody that is out of duty, they're accustomed to that, and you have a whole new set of issues. So again, I think there's reason, that's one of the reasons why God says with the elders, watch. And you know, your design, part of your job is designed to protect the flock. So when you start seeing those things, try to, you know, as the old Barney Fife expression is, nip it in the bud. Deal with it early, because it will turn into a habit. Anybody else? Okay, I think we're down to K on our sheet. If you didn't get one, we still have some copies of the sheet in the middle pew at the back. 1 Samuel 15:9, 1 Samuel 16:19, so we'll ask readers to get both of those, and then 1 Samuel 17, we'll ask for another helper there. Who wants to pick up with 1 Samuel 15:9 in just a minute? All right, Steve, and then we'll also ask you to pull from the next chapter, 1 Samuel 16:19, and 1 Samuel 17:15. Who wants to take care of that one? Lois. 1 Samuel 17:15, and then we'll also ask you to stay in that chapter and read verse 28 after a bit, too. Okay, let's start 1 Samuel 15:9. This goes back to some of the points that we were talking about earlier. When it comes to the fair, Is somebody just going to grab one of the sheep, if they're in 4-H, just one of the sheep, and say, well, let's use this for my 4-H entry? They're not going to do that. We don't go to the store and head over to the bananas or the apples and say, well, I need a bunch of bananas, and eeny, meeny, miny, mo, I'm going to take you home. We check them out. We want the best bananas, we want the best apples, we want the best fruit that we can possibly get. And such is also true when people deal with sheep when it comes to 4-H or any of the other animals that are out there. When it comes to the church, do we have some quote-unquote best Christians? What would we say?
I think we do, and I think most of the time when you have somebody you think is the best Christian, they're more leaders in the church, whether they're elders or not, they're more leaders in the church. But they can help bring others closer to that same area.
Okay. Maybe that question was a little bit of a shock, so I'm going to just hold on Ray's comment, not that it was wrong. But let's put it in the secular world. Do we have some best employees? I think most would say, well, yes, we do. Now, does that mean that the other employees are bad employees? No. But let's go back to the Kroger's illustration and the Nutty Bar illustration. I'm sure they had some fine people there. But not every employee was knocking on my door saying, did you find everything today? Is there anything that you need? So, you know, sometimes there are some people who are doing what needs to be done, but they go where? Out of the way, sometimes we'll use the expression above and beyond. There are some people who really want to do as much as they possibly can. So that's really, when I talk about the best Christians in the church, that's really what I'm talking about. Not that the other folks that are worshiping with the congregation, but here are people who really want to try to serve God as fully as they can. Therese, you had a hand.
I think, well, those of us that say, what can I do? Some of us are not leaders. We just flat out, we want to follow. But tell me what to do and how to do it.
Sure.
And so if we have that attitude, we don't all have to be leaders.
No. Paul talked about, when he dealt with the Corinthians, that there are many ways to serve. Not everybody's going to be the eye, not everybody's going to be the arm, and so forth. We do need the big toe, we do need the pinky, we need all the parts of the body to work together because there are a lot of different things that need to be fulfilled. But that should be one of the things that we strive for in the church. When we think about best, the opposite word would be the
worst.
And do you think that as elders deal with people in a local congregation just like sheep and shepherds, they've got some people that are at the other end of the stick? There are some people that they go out and they talk to and they try to work with, and yet the individual or the family has made some choices which are bad choices, and it is just a perpetual problem. And it just looks like whatever is done, you know, it's like a house that you can just never fix. There's always something breaking. There's always some expense that needs to be paid because, you know, it's just like a bottomless pit. And you just work and work and try and try. So I think in a lot of congregations, you've got, you know, probably the majority in the middle to the best category. But elders are going to deal with some people who are very, very frustrated. Well, that again relates to what we talked about earlier. If you're dealing with your fair share of that kind of stuff, that kind of bad stuff on a negative basis, and then all you get from the congregation is bad stuff, more complaints. How do you feel as an elder? I want to quit, right? I mean, you know, this looks pretty hopeless to me. Well, to help offset some of that, what can a congregation do? Encourage them, right? You know, thank you for what you do. We don't know everything that you do. We may never have a clue as far as a lot of the things that you do, but we do appreciate you. We do want to be the very best that we can in our local congregation to help you. It's the same thing in the workplace. If you've got people that are habitually coming in late, you've got people that are doing the very least that they can do to continue to get a paycheck, and if you're the owner of the company, what are you feeling? Well, okay, you might feel disrespect that people don't have enough respect for you to do what they promised to do when they took the job. What else are you feeling? What about frustration? I mean, you're making your production levels, but if you had people who were really committed, what would be taking place?
Productivity.
You know, you're going to increase significantly the productivity, or maybe you're going to increase the quality of the item that you're producing. So, again and again, what's true in the world is often so true in the church. Any thoughts on that before we move on? Ray.
I worked for a company one time, and we had a fellow that worked, he was very good at what he'd done. And they paid him a good wage, but he said, I can do better if I can do it by piecework. And he actually could, because he put out a whole lot more effort for that. He could do as much in 4 hours as he was normally doing in 8 hours. I don't think he lasted very long with that job because the boss eventually recognized that the guy was really loafing on the job to begin with. So, and he was taken off nearly every day by 12 to 1 o'clock when he should have been there until 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the congregation, the same kind of thing too. If you've got half-hearted effort being put in, you know, preacher, elder, you know, Bible class teacher, whoever it is, it's going to show and it's going to have some effect on the work. So it is a problem. And
not only does it have an effect on the work, it has an effect on the workers, the other workers.
Yeah.
They're seeing this guy get better treatment than I am working 8 hours a day.
Yeah, that's true. And with the elders, the perception can be there. If they're not doing anything, you know, if they're not showing up at those kinds of things, then why on earth, I mean, if the leaders are not doing that, then why on earth should I? So again, it kind of flows downhill from that perspective. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back and see where we left off. 1 Samuel 16:19.
Therefore, Saul sent a messenger to Jesse and said, send me your son David, who is with the sheep.
Okay. What I would take from that is the word with. Shepherds are people who are with the sheep. Well, that kind of ties in with several of the points that we've made earlier. If elders, if the perception is the elders are here and we're down here, good thing or bad thing for the local congregation? It's got to be a bad thing, isn't it? People need to see that we're in this together, right? You know, and the same thing is true with a preacher and a Bible class teacher. You know, if kids in the Bible classes don't feel like they can really connect with the teacher, that you're just some kind of super Christian or, you know, way out there, not a good thing. You know, there was a story, let's see, where did I read that? Was it in the latest issue of The Advocate? I'm sure it is. There's a picture of a campfire. It's probably about the 7th article in there. And this fellow was telling about a situation where there was a school system. And the people who were involved with this school system often saw the janitor sitting across the table with the school superintendent. Now, if you just knew who the two people were, you'd probably think, well, that's kind of an unusual situation. I mean, what's the connection between these guys? You got the janitor, and a lot of people don't. That's a perfectly fine occupation. We've had some Christians do that kind of work. I did that kind of work as a second job for a while when I was in the military. But you would say, well, hey, you know, you've got this white-collar guy that's way up there as far as the school system, and you've got this fellow who's doing some blue-collar work, and, you know, if they just talked every once in a while, that might seem to be kind of a little unusual, but to have regular discussions across from the table, it looks like we are on equal ground. Well, it turned out that they were both elders in the same local congregation. So I'm not sure how much of the conversations dealt with school-related things, but as far as church-related things, you know, so when you think about that, you have that idea of a with. They were together, not only as elders, but also when you think about it congregationally. Well, let's take that and apply it to today. Do you think you might have a congregation where elders are separated, maybe because of education, maybe because of background, race or wealth or some other things? Do you think that you could have some big differences in elders? Yeah. You know, maybe even one elder speaks English as a second language. And yet, as those elders work together in that eldership, biblically, what should be taking place? Like the elder that was a superintendent and the elder that was a janitor, hey, we're with one another. You know, we're together. We're on the same playing field here. Well, if you don't have that in the eldership, do you think that's probably going to overflow into the congregation? Yeah. But you can make sure that within the eldership and certainly within the congregation, you have the idea that we are in this together. And if that's not happening, then that's certainly going to be an issue. Thoughts on that? Okay, let's head over to what we find in 1 Samuel 17, both verses 15 and 28. We'll start with verse 15.
David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem.
Okay, what does sheep need, based on that verse? They need to be fed, Tended would be another word that we might use there. So in the physical realm, sheep need to be cared for, tended to, and that's also true in the spiritual realm. So that takes us back one more time to the idea that elders, they just are not some kind of board of directors. They're going to be with the sheep, interacting with them, trying to do those kinds of things. I know that preachers have done this over the years. I do this from time to time as well. But and there are a lot of cases where it wouldn't work. But I was probably about 20 when I first became aware of this. We'd been Christians for, you know, maybe a year and a half or so. And well, I'll give you two illustrations. What would you think if you have a congregation of elders? Elder, maybe he's retired, so he just drops in at work one day to see you for a little bit. Now, again, if you're out there in the factory, that's probably not going to work out very well. But there are some other places where you can drop in and just say, hi, I've been thinking about you, praying for you. Anybody ever had that kind of thing happen with an elder? Preacher? Fellow Christian? Okay. That can happen. That has happened for some people. And again, not a big thing, but just a way of kind of touching base with a flock. What about, and Stan, he's not here this morning, so I will use him as an example. Stan has done this with some people. If you've got a preacher, generally the work schedule is flexible enough where if he's going to go up and see you in the hospital, at least my practice is generally to go up the day of the procedure. But Stan, when he was an elder, and still does this with various people, when he was working, you know, he couldn't go up the day of the surgery, obviously that was a work day. So he would go over with some people and see him the preceding night. I thought that was kind of a classy thing to do. He knew he couldn't go the next day. Here's a person before, the day before the surgery. Go over, pray with them, talk with them for a little while, and encourage them. So there are different ways to be with the flock. There are different ways to try to tend to people. Not everything may be a personal visit, but there are things like that can be done, and that's going to hopefully help unite the shepherd with the flock. You see that with literal flocks, that association creates a good bond, and that's also true congregationally. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move on? Okay. Let's pick our next reference from 1 Samuel 17, and that's 17:28. Eliab.
Eliab. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard from when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle."
Okay, what can a guy do, a shepherd do with his flock, or the sheep? From that verse. He says, you've left them, forsaken them. They're not being cared for. Taking that, applying it to the spiritual realm, do you think that elders can leave their flock? It's also possible there. What would be some examples of that?
They're always traveling.
Well, you want to scoot a couple feet away from your father-in-law. Ray did some of that, and we had Dave Weaver do some of that as well. When you think about elders, sometimes their job is going to require them to travel a good bit, so they're going to be out of the area. And you did do that, right, as an elder? Okay. Now, would you say that necessarily disqualifies a man from serving as an elder? No. I mean, in the past, that may have made things a lot more difficult, but now phone calls, we've got emails, we can do conference calls, there's Skype. A lot of different ways to keep in communication. So it's going to be a lot more difficult, but not impossible. But sometimes you do have that, and you can have a situation where a man decides, well, you know, this is my job, it's important, it's the way I'm going to make my living, so I'll just kind of, from time to time, just kind of check in. That's probably not going to be the best arrangement, not really consistent with trying to be with the flock. But in the other set of circumstances, the guy's doing the best with what he can.
And then it's how long they travel. Yeah. On to a lot of different places, but they're usually short trips. They're not month upon month. I'm talking about people maybe going to Florida for the winter, maybe not congregation for that long.
Yeah, now that, again, you don't want to make rules where we don't have any in Scripture.
Right.
But if a fellow is going to be out of the area for, 4, 6, 8 months out of the year, and maybe not just 1 year, but I mean, that's fairly typical once you get down there and get into warmer weather. Then you have to, in that situation, look back and really say, are you really trying to be with the flock? Because at least on the surface, it would seem that the vacation time the away time is going to be more important than trying to care for the flock. And in that set of circumstances, you're going to really, I think, have a struggle trying to convince people that I'm really trying to be the local shepherd there, or one of the local shepherds, as I am down there, you know, enjoying sunny Florida. So that would, I don't know of anybody that's actually tried to do that or suggested that, but common sense would point people in the other direction. Where else? Elder might forsake the flock.
They wouldn't have to travel, but there are issues to be dealt with, and they just don't deal with it.
Yeah, you've got a person, right, for whatever reason, it could be selfishness or something else. You know, I just don't want to participate. I just don't want to comment on that. You guys take responsibility for it. You know, I'll show up at the meetings, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to do anything. But I still want to be an elder. Hey, now wait a minute. That's not what we're reading about in Scripture. You know, you're with the flock. It's not always going to be easy. So you just don't check out and keep that designation.
I know you and Keith went away on missionary trips. You know, it wasn't a long time, but still you were away from the flock.
Yeah. So you can have some temper. You know, you got a guy who's sick. You know, when Stan was serving as an elder, there was a time where our elders met at Stan's house. I mean, he simply wasn't mobile. So we still wanted to make sure that he was included in the meetings as far as elders, but I mean, he just wasn't getting out of the house very often. So you do have to make some adjustments sometimes, but if you've got a fellow who's actually somehow forsaken the flock, then again, you know, that's shirking the responsibility, and that puts you in a different kettle of fish, so to speak.
We had an elder out there that I felt needed to step down on before he did. He always put sports, or not work so much, but just sports, and it might be some other activities ahead of being an elder. I mean, nothing stepped in the way of a football game as far as he was concerned. And you might have a very sick individual part of the congregation, and elders might need to get together with that input. He would not miss a
Yeah. Now that might not be forsaking the flock in the long-term sense, but at least, you know, if somebody can forsake the flock for a short time.
And whether it's sports or whether it's camping or something of that nature,
Yeah. When you sign on for this responsibility, and there may be some times where you fail. I mean, nobody's going to be perfect. But when you've got a consistent pattern like that, where you're putting, whether it's sports or something else, above that work, then again, that's an issue. Because you've really taken this as what is your primary responsibility over that. In this case, it's secular entertainment over that spiritual work.
Typically, football games are on Sunday afternoon, and it's gone quite a bit on Sunday afternoon.
Well, that would have been, from what I can tell in the Scriptures, something that definitely could have been looked at and addressed. Okay, let's pick up with where we left off. This is from 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 2. And then we'll head back to that 1 Samuel 17, 28 passage. 1 Samuel 25, 21. Anybody there? Able to read it? 1 Samuel 25, 21. All right, Betty.
Now David had said, "Surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed.
Is that 1 Samuel 25, 2? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. We need, 25, 2, and then let's have somebody go back to 1 Samuel 17 and read verse 28.
There was a man and man whose possessions were in Carmel, and the man was very great, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel.
Okay, if you've got 3,000 sheep, a bunch of them or just a couple of them? You've got a bunch. All right, so you can put bunch or many in that second blank. Now let's go back to 1 Samuel 17, verse 28. Anybody there? Lois?
Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep
there it is.
In the wilderness?"
How many sheep here? 1 Samuel 17, 28? Few. Well, again, let's take this secular information and apply it to the spiritual realm. When you have elders, do you think that you might have many sheep? You got a congregation of 900 people, or you've got a congregation of 2,000 or 4,000 people. We've had some big churches, especially in the U.S. And then we've had some small churches. You know, you've got 10, 15, 20 people, and elders have been in both places. I've always been kind of fascinated by a large congregation, you know, maybe 1,000 people. Our kids worship with a larger congregation. Germantown, I think, is probably, you know, around, what, 800 or 900? Teresa stepped out, but I think they're in that category. And never seen much as far as how the eldership works, but son-in-law did tell me one time that there was something that needed to be addressed, that needed to be addressed by the elders. And the way that he described it was, you sort of go before these, you know, 8 or 10 people, lay out your case, and it almost sounded like the Supreme Court. You know, where you're, as an attorney, going in and just kind of laying everything out for them, and then as a group they try to discuss things. Now, again, the Bible doesn't specifically describe how elders are going to shepherd that local congregation. But in this particular instance, you have elders sort of divided up a little bit. Now, you could divide that up into a couple different ways. Would you have the right, biblically, to say, okay, we're going to have an elder over evangelism? Now, he's not going to make the exclusive decisions, but when things come up, you know, within a certain range, he's got authority, and he's going to make those decisions over evangelism, and then when we get together for, you know, monthly meeting or weekly meeting, whatever it happens to be, he's going to highlight those things, and if it looks like there's something that's outside his authority, then it's going to be a group decision. Could we do it in that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. Could we have, as far as trying to watch over the flock, we have... We divide up our alphabet, and we say, okay, Elder A, he's going to take from A to C, and that is obviously going to be dependent a little bit on how many names are there. And then Elder 2, he's going to take from D to G, because there are fewer names there. And again, you know, he's not going to, you know, be the sole elder for those people, but we're going to try to designate him that if your name ends in, for example, you know, Charlie, you go ahead unless the circumstances are really unusual, you go ahead and see Elder 1. Could we do that in that way?
Yes.
Yes. And again, there may be something that's going on there. Maybe there's a financial need, and that needs to be brought before the whole group. So when you're dealing with a congregation of close to 1,000 or maybe multiple thousands of people, the exact function of the eldership is probably going to take a different form, because you've only got 10 people, one elder per 100 people, if you break it down mathematically. But if you've got a congregation of 50 and three elders... Well, again, it's probably not going to be too difficult to have an elders meeting and have pretty much everything on the table, just because you're dealing with far fewer people. So as we think about elders, just like what we picked up from 1 Samuel 17 and 25, sometimes we're dealing with a few sheep. Sometimes we're dealing with many sheep. And when you have that disparity, when you have that difference, wouldn't physical shepherds deal with that in different ways? If you've got 10 sheep, you're probably going to have different tactics than if you've got 1,000 sheep. It's just that the nature of the game changes because you're dealing with different numbers. So we have to recognize that in the spiritual realm as well.
On top of that, you would be able to do that because it tells us in the scripture that we're supposed to be in the same mind and the same judgment. So I would hope that the elders were in the same mind and the same judgment.
Right.
Even more so than the congregation.
Yeah.
So they know each other very well, so they know whether or not they should decide things together or leave it with one other elder.
You see that with husbands and wives as well. Well, I don't want to go too far with this because I really might put my foot in my mouth. I can think of one situation where a wife went out and bought a truck for a husband. Now, that situation was a little unusual, but you know, generally before that,
money.
Yeah. But generally before that kind of thing happens, you know, the husband and wife will kind of know how each other is thinking and be in general agreement. But if there's going to be a major decision like that, Mama usually doesn't show up and say, here are the truck keys, sweetie, and here's the first bill payment. I mean, that can happen, and sometimes that may happen with an eldership, but generally, as you say, people know each other well enough to have a pretty good idea of where things need to head.